Hello.
Hi, Ashley. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Yeah. So I'm excited about this project you're doing.
Yeah, me too. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah,
thank you so much for being interested, too.
Yeah. What program are you in?
I'm an animation major.
Okay. They were just getting them started when I was there. In fact, a friend of mine, Daniel Gonzalez, was in the program at that time, and now he like works for Pixar.
Oh, nice.
And he worked on Frozen, actually. But that's great. And are you? What year are you?
This is my last semester.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it's nice to do this project as, like, the last thing I'm doing, too.
Yeah. Leave your mark.
Yep. So do you mind if I record this interview?
No, not at all.
Okay, thanks. To start, could you tell me a little bit about the work you're doing now?
Sure. So at the moment, I am working in painting, collage, memoir, installation, primarily exploring themes of landscape and installation of the body, using a lot of materials from my like day-to-day life to create these sort of like invented spaces that speak to natural settings. We're also simultaneously constructive. So I'm making wall work that are like really dense and textured, using things like medical records and daycare stuff, and also like holiday themed plastic tablecloths and nature calendars from the dollar store. And then I'm also creating environments where these wall works fit. So for example, past year I've opened three shows. One was at the Mad Museum. Museum of Arts and Design, and the theme was more sort of like oceanic. I had like a big sort of like water archipelago floor, and then I had another show that we closed at the beginning at Fall Flag Gallery in Long Island City, New York, and it was all kind of based around. I covered 3,000 square feet of wall space with the colors of my skin throughout the season. And it's also like based around a painting by my grandmother. But there's this theme of excavation of like both like body and roots and creativity, my creative practice. But it also at the same time looks like sort of like a desert theme.
Nice.
So, but yeah, those are the kinds of things that I'm working on.
Well, congrats on like all the shows you're doing, and especially like the work you've been doing as well. I've been able to like take a look at them as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, congrats. So what was your relationship with the Oakland campus, and especially concerning like the diversity in the community at CCA? In connection with your work as well?
Well, so when I was at CCA, I was in the community arts major. I don't even know if it still exists. But it was just getting started when I came in as a freshman. Because of second year. And so I was doing a lot of work with what was then called the Center for Art and Public Life, based on the Oakland campus, working with Sonia Manion. And at that point, my studies were really centered around working in public schools around the Bay Area, learning about nonprofit development, thinking about activism from the standpoint of an arts practice. I've always been a painter, and so painting was my minor, and I was taking fine arts classes, and I had, working in the painting studios used to be there as well, like above where the print shop is. That's like I know so much has changed there. So
no, yeah, it's still a major here, for sure.
Yeah, I know, but they moved it. I know they moved like to Mexico. But but anyway, so I was very connected to the campus, especially like through the Center for Public Life and through, you know, I was working for Ascend School in Fruitvale. I was working for Berkeley Alternative High School in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And then Sonia had started this program called 100 Families, where artists would work with families all across Oakland. Like over dinner, you do like workshops, and I was working in Oakland's Chinatown. So mm-hmm. really all over the earth, you know, CPA was my hub, but they were also just sending me to all these places where I had the opportunity to interact in a very like meaningful and intimate way with like different communities. Very different kinds of communities.
Mm-hmm.
So that really informed like how my studies were shaped. That really informed how I was beginning to see not only my art developing, but my identity developing in relation to my art.
Mm-hmm.
And contending with some sort of conflicting ideas between the conversations we were having in that program and the conversations I was having, for example, in like art history class or
mm-hmm.
my more fine arts classes that seemed to be more isolated from that reality. There was like, it was my junior year. Throughout all 4 years, I belonged to a student group of the cohort.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a group for students of color on campus where we would, we got a scholarship. We'd also meet like on a weekly or monthly basis at the center and just like a family, you know.
Yeah.
Be able to have conversations or do different field trips or whatever together. And there were some different staff members there who, like Vicky Bertiz and Sonia Magnon and Celia Rodriguez, who were sort of like mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this safe space for us to also like decompress. And, you know, a lot of us were dealing with day to day challenges being in school, whether it's like dealing with like, you know, feeling sort of ostracized and not seeing like our histories like represented in our curriculum, or outright dealing with like racist incidents with fellow students or teachers. You know, there's definitely a major like economic factor involved too. A lot of us were there on scholarship, and
mm-hmm.
so like what it meant to be either first generation, you know, going to college, or just, you know, having to contend with like, you know, not having a lot of money, but our peers had a lot of money, and that kind of like interfering with the way we were able to engage or socialize.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like nuances to like what that navigation looked like, but being a part of this group was like really, really important in that we were able to kind of be there as a family for each other and just have a space to extend. There was a lot of frustration we were expressing and not really knowing how, you know, to each other.
Yeah.
Supported like faculty members, but not quite knowing really like or feeling empowered at the moment really to like voice those concerns to administration.
Mm-hmm.
And just so happened that gosh, man. I forget the exact date, but it was the 58th centennial. And they were celebrating 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with a slogan that was sort of like a part of their like philosophy around the centennial called the future. CPA 100 is the future of culture. And they made big banners mm-hmm. with it, posters, you know, like on the catalogs and everything. And they hung them all over Oakland, they hung them all over San Francisco, Kansas. And on the streets, like, you know, like, the city streets. And it was just, like, a kind of a strange slogan that we were trying to understand, you know, amongst ourselves and the cohort, like, what does the future culture mean? Like, mm-hmm. like that's a pretty like bold statement. And what does it mean that, you know, we're like a primarily white institution in the middle of one of the most diverse cities in the country, you know, and the fact that the demographics don't reflect that, both culturally and economically. And so I had an assignment in my 7th, 4th class with Josh Green.
Mm-hmm.
And the assignment was like, make a campaign, be campaign on anything. And I decided I wanted to make a counter campaign responding to the CCA's centennial slogan. Uh-huh. And so there's a lot of conversations happening, but I was really just kind of referencing the ongoing conversations that have been happening, you know, with my cohort. And I decided to make these posters that look just like the CCA posters, same font, same style. But instead of just saying CCA owners and cultures, I would also publicize the demographics of the top underrepresented groups. So they read like CCA 100, the future culture, 0.4% Native American, or 1.8% mm-hmm. African American, or 0.6% Pacific Islander, you know. And my friends helped me, because, like, we have all these posters all over campus one night, and also made buttons,
mm-hmm.
so people could also wear the demographic. So this was something that we, that went up and was definitely, like, provoked a lot of conversation. But while the conversation was going, I went around with a tape recorder, like an actual tape recorder, old school. But I rented from the MCA.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just recording people's thoughts. Like, what do you think about this? Like, what is culture to you, and how does it relate or not to, you know, or how does the future of culture, the slogan, relate or not to, like, your experience of diversity on campus? And I was interviewing students, faculty, and staff, and basically it all amounted to this, like, 60-page, like, transcribed report. Where there was like a wider range of like ideas and opinions around what that meant, and then also what people felt the school could do to like improve.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up like getting this like scholarship to like study abroad in Spain. So I was like, all right, here it is. Sonia Mañon was like very supportive, and she like funded the printing of the report, and so basically I left it on the desk of the administrators and then like took off. and it was interesting, it was like when I got back the next year, there was significantly, there was a lot of conversations that was happening, but there was a shift in the enrollment. You know, not that that's the only thing that was the problem, but yeah, it provoked. I didn't know it was going to happen when I did it. I didn't know, you know, I was like, I could get this out. Like,
mm-hmm.
But it just felt really urgent. It just felt like this was, like, my opportunity to, like, help, to, like, both voice my concern, but also, like, help them to empower my friends, my community to, you know, speak up.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So, anyways, this is a long-winded response to your question.
No. I really want, I was going to ask you about that project anyways, so thank you for talking about it. Yeah.
There actually might be a copy of the report in the library.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But it's also, it's on my website too.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's something that you want to reference or need to reference, yeah.
Yeah, it's, people at school still talk about that project.
Oh, good.
Which is kind of amazing. Yeah. How do you feel about that, this project, and how people still talk about it here? How do you feel about it kind of being your mark on CCA?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess it kind of gives me mixed feelings knowing that people still talk about it, because on one hand, you know, I want to feel that I had some positive impact on the community, right, and helped to bring about some change, but also if people are still talking about that, that's also theater, but there's still challenges, maybe similar challenges that folks are facing. And, you know, that was, I graduated, oh my God, that was like 10 years ago. 2009. Yeah. So, yeah, 10 years ago. So, you know, I know that there's just like a lot of work to be done. I know that there's a lot of changes happening on campus. And that's been a conversation for a long time, but I know that they're finally making it. You know, it's sort of sad to me, especially seeing, like, when I went back to visit last year, you know, the center's not there anymore. That was such an important part of my experience there. You know, I see a lot of changes. But I think it's important, you know, that students are still actively involved in the conversations that shape their institutions and active in engaging each other, you know, because students are, like, not even faculty have as much of a say, but it's like the school can't function without the students. And so, like, I always would hope that students feel empowered to speak up about how they feel like they're being served or not.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. I think that's a very important thing at TCA right now, is trying to empower students to speak up and openly discuss issues right now, especially with everything going on, just to be able to come to school and use that sort of conversation to decompress and also use it in our art. So you visited last year, so you are aware of the move to SF?
Yeah.
Do you have any feelings about the Oakland campus going away?
Oh, I'm so sad. It's really, I think it's really devastating. The Oakland campus is really, like, the heart of UCA, you know? It's where it all began. Just, like, I think Full Craft was dropped from the name shortly before I started. So I think, you know, that was like a really big part of our conversation at that point. But I mean, I just think about like what it means. You know, I mean, it's just like the campus in and of itself is just like so lovely, and I have a very like nostalgic relationship to it. But also thinking about what it means to be planted in Oakland. You know, so much of, you know, again, it being that sort of hub for me when I was doing a lot of my community work. All around Oakland and Berkeley, you know, I feel like, you know, UCA removed itself from that place and from that history of its, from its own history. There is this sort of like disembodiment. There is this sort of like there is this sort of detachment from, you know, a history that is like essential to its making, essential to the identity of its philosophy and even the, you know, the history of the students and the work that they do, you know, continue to do. So yeah, I'm very sad about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people on campus are really sad. Especially, yeah, I mean, there's so much history, and the nature aspect as well is not the same on the SF campus. So, yeah. What was your relationship with the actual campus? Like, did you have any favorite spots to go to, or any stories you'd like to share?
Like the lawn is so great. I remember, like, took many naps and had many lunches on that lawn. I was in the Clifton dorm my freshman year. That was like one of my, like, that was such a, like, a big year for me. So it was like the first year I was away from home, and I could sort of start to experience some independence. But, you know, being right on campus, like, we were definitely still very nurtured in that way. You know, being being within the housing, having that community, like, be able to, like, work late nights in the studios across the street and then, like, just come back home. Mm-hmm. Some of my closest friends, you know, I made during that time, still in touch with. And I was also, I should say, I was also an RA my sophomore year, but this was, I don't know if you guys still have it, I was an RA.
Oh, yeah, they still do.
At Webster Hall.
Oh, yeah, I live there now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and I was, you know, a little bit further down, but still no one. I mean, the painting, where the, what used to be the painting studio, it was like that upstairs from the print shop, the wooden building. Mm-hmm. I just remember, like, that deck, like, sitting out there and having that really beautiful, expansive view of the city and, mm-hmm. like, that up in the distance. And, man, I just remember, yeah, having so many amazing conversations on that deck while I was, like, there working late night on my paintings or throughout the day. And one of my favorite spots because all were kind of quiet and I could, like, sit there and meditate. Mm-hmm. Folks didn't really bother me. The carriage house, like, had some really, like, remember having some really, like, dynamic classes there. In mm-hmm. fact, actually, the carriage house is where a lot of the conversations happened around the Future Culture Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, installing sculptures in that little, like, path. I don't remember, like, names of the things anymore, but the pathway that was, like, near the lawn. I remember, like, one of my foundation classes, like, we were first starting to deal with installation, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking back now, with the work I do now, you know, I guess it was, like, really important. Seeds that were being planted that I accept when I first started interacting with nature and, like, using my art to interact with nature and, like, building sculptures, like, on that little pathway. So, but yeah, very deeply connected to that space.
Yeah, pretty great memories. Yeah, it's really great. I really love the Oakland campus. So, when you took classes at CCA, and you have a lot of projects that intertwine culture and, like, your ethnicity and your artwork, was there ever a time where you kind of struggled getting those kind of ideas in your projects at CCA?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just curious because, I mean, I've gone through that kind of experience and I've always wondered if it happened before with students before me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm just, like, even remembering, like, my intro to art history class when we spent the entire semester going over this European canon, touch a little bit upon, like, Chinese art history. And then it was, like, the last class, and it was, like, this supplemental, like, they're like, okay, it's like, the teacher's like, okay, we have, like, an option. Like, we have one last class. We can either cover Latin America or Africa. And it was, like, also, like, the throwaway class, like, no one even needed to come. And it's just like, yeah, it was so disheartening, you know. This was the intro to art history that everybody had to take before they even went off to their, you know, their whatever their major was. But this is the thing that, like, okay, now they're going to go in and whatever. Like, this is their education, that there's not even awareness or even, like, a regard for any other history that exists outside of the European canon. I really thought it as a form of violence, and perpetuation of, you know, colonial history, really. So it's interesting because, like, when I did that whole Future Culture campaign and then went to Spain, and when I was in Spain, I studied at it was a fine art school, traditional fine art school there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of my chance, because I was doing a lot of community art stuff. But I was like, okay, let me just have to, like, focus more on my, like, geo, like do really, like, academic art stuff, like, work with models and in classical training, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I took, like, a class where I was, like, you know, botanical garden, like painting flowers and stuff, and it seemed very tangential at the time, but now a lot of it feels landscape. But when I was Spain, you know, I was also understanding it, like I'm Filipina, and mm-hmm. you know, to be in Spain, that, you know, they colonized the Philippines for like 350 years, and I took a class I took there was actually an Oceanic African anthropology course, and it was taught by this great professor, but it was interesting to kind of understand it also from the Spanish perspective. Mm-hmm. It gave me another lens too, in terms of like understanding how that history is talked about or framed back at in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like I was going to, or you know, we take field trips to the anthropology in Madrid, and it hasn't been updated in like 100 years, you know, so like it's problematic. Like, you know, they have these like models of like new like Filipino women, like typical Filipina, you know, they describe the types, and they'd have like artifacts and that kind of thing, but it's like with no criticality of pronouns, like how things were displayed. That was from the perspective of tillage and colonization, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so, so that actually really informed the thesis work that I did when I got back to UCA.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I had to like, take a semester off when I got back, like a lot of thesis stuff. But I ended up, for my thesis project, making a series of like 100 portraits of my colleagues at UCA in the style of like turn of the century ethnographic portraits.
Mm-hmm.
And I used the technique of like tea, like dipping it in tea and coffee. Like that, like forgers use that technique when they're trying to fashion into gold.
Mm-hmm.
And so sort of salon style, I like cut it entire gallery like with old antique frames, like portraits of in the way that I saw it in the museum in Spain.
Oh, nice.
Portraits of, like, contemporary portraits of my friends, but
mm-hmm.
that were kind of antiquated, and actually used excerpts from my interviews from the future of culture to create labels that went along with the portraits. So they were, like, hand-typed. They looked, like, different, like, from history. Yeah, they looked like they were from, like, 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be, like, wants to be more diversity on campus, like, in the catalog, or... you know, teacher was scared of me because he thought I had a knife, or, you know, like things uh-huh. like, you read and you start to read them, and you're like, oh, these are, like, actual experiences that people have had. And so, like, the part of the, there was an interactive component where visitors would, like, put on white archival gloves, and then they'd actually, they were the ones who would adhere the labels, and she'd decide who got what labels. So, it was sort of a full circle moment where I was, like, my art practice and my like study abroad together with this ongoing conversation that I was having at CPA around diversity, but also understanding it from like a deeper historical perspective, not just like what we were talking about, you know, that at that point on campus, but like it being a part of a longer, deeper legacy of violence.
No, that sounds, I would have loved to see that. That sounds really great.
I think that's also on my website, too.
Oh, okay. Awesome. I'll make sure to check that out.
All about faith.
I have one last question.
Sure.
So, at CCA, and I'm pretty sure you didn't answer this, yes, hopefully not, but how would you like to be remembered at CCA, or in general? As an artist?
Oh, really good question. Very important question. I'd like to be remembered. Well, you know, like I said, from the standpoint of like the project of future culture, you know, I'd like it to be remembered, but in the way that it's like, oh, that one time that we had to deal with. And look how far we've come, you know,
mm-hmm.
as sort of a marker in time that shows healing and growth and evolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, like, you know, the work that I'm making now, I think so much about legacy. I think so much about, especially from the standpoint of, like, an mean that like a lot of the materials I use now do last forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they won't go away. And you know, what does that mean in terms of like how I can possibly construct my own legacy?
Mm-hmm.
That's also self-critical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, I want to be remembered. Of course, I want my work to be relevant, you know, 50 years from now, 30 years from now, but not in the same way that it's relevant now. I would hope that it will continue to live on in a way that inspires people and uplifts people and helps to give others perspective on where they're at and what they can, and the reality that they can take.